Hello friends, I'm taking the chapter number 5, Motivation. My favorite chapter in terms of human endeavor, human behavior. As a trainer, I work towards this particular process, which is very, very important for us to really enjoy what we are doing. If I'm talking to you right now, I need to be enjoying what I'm doing. This cannot happen unless I'm motivated. This is a very neglected area in many companies. It is felt that motivation is all about money. Give money and people get motivated. To an extent, yes, money does motivate. But beyond that, there are certain factors, psychological factors, behavioral factors, which need to be understood. When the organization grows very big, putting motivation into people down the line is very, very challenging. It's not that easy. Now, what is my measure of motivation as far as the company is concerned? The average employee should be able to come to the office happy and singing even on a Monday morning. And in turn, day after day when he does this, he would be engaging himself emotionally with the company and he would not leave the company. Now, this is the ideal form of motivation that a company can initiate and drive down the line. So it starts with the company culture, where motivation has to come from top to bottom. Every human being is different, but at the same time, motivation is something that needs a proper process and a program behind it. And companies are working towards it. They are all making things happen. Many companies are doing beyond just the monetary motivation. But it's important that we go to identify at the right time when a person is gone out of motivation. This identification is very challenging. Okay. The objectives of this chapter, after studying this chapter, you'll be able to know what is motivation. Some of the early theories of motivation have been also enlisted here, and some contemporary theories of motivation, application of motivation in an organization, how it is done. And the structure is short and simple, nature and importance of motivation. Early theories of motivation 5.2, 5.3 is contemporary or modern theories of motivation, and 5.4 applied motivation practices. Finally, we'll end up with a summary as usual. What's motivation? It's a process which begins with physiological need or a psychological need, which triggers behavior that is aimed at a goal. I'll repeat slowly. Motivation is a process which begins with a physiological need, a body need, the need of your body, or a psychological need of your mind, of your inner self, or combination of both. This triggers a type of a behavior in you to achieve a certain goal. So a very important thing, the key word is there is a need that arises in you, need. So there's a famous need drive theory of motivation wherein the need is given an importance. Okay? Without a need is a basic requirement of any human being. I need air to breathe and to live. I need water to quench my thirst. I need sleep to overcome my tiredness and regenerate myself. So needs are very basic to all mankind, regardless of their position, regardless of their ethnic background, regardless of their gender. These needs are common. When a need is satisfied, when a need is automatically triggered into satisfaction, it happens due to a certain inner drive called instinct. The instinct takes care of the need automatically without even you asking for it. Haven't you noticed many times you're traveling in a train, in a local train in Mumbai, for example, and in the afternoon, you have had a heavy lunch and you're just dozing. It's not the most comfortable position in which you're sitting in the bench, in the train. But you doze off to sleep and you get a good sleep also. So it goes to show that when the need arises, automatically the creature, the organism, the human being, they fulfill the need anyway. This is particularly true when we are small children, you have noticed it. Whatever they want to do, they just do it. When they feel the need, they'll cry. When they feel the need, they will, you know, just go around in the room and do all sorts of things. But as you grow older, you become a social creature and you're trained by your parents, by your teachers, by everybody that you should have a proper behavior. Proper behavior, inverted commas, which means you can't do things instinct driven. If you are hungry and your body actually needs food, you have to delay your taking food because you're in a certain classroom or you're in a certain work. This is expected in society and we are all trained into that, right? Now, as you progress, you notice that when you're growing up, you delay what is called as a gratification of your need. The need arises, and as kids, 1 year old, 2 year old, we naturally and instantly gratify our need. That is called as instant gratification, instant fulfillment or instant appeasement of one's needs. Okay? Now, as against that, when you grow up, this instant appeasement is delayed. And so we go for delayed gratification. Please understand this very clearly. This is a very important point to be noted as to why we sometimes display bad behavior. When a need is not fulfilled, especially it happens with adults because of our social training, I delay my lunch beyond 1 o'clock. The need for having lunch, the trigger is already gone. My stomach is rumbling. I need to have lunch. But I delay my lunch because of my social reasons. Working, I have to attend to a client call. So many things come up. So I delay my lunch beyond 1 to 2 to 3 to 4. And you all know what happens to you when you delay the lunch. First and foremost, it starts affecting your body. The physical part of your body gets affected. You start getting an acidity or some sort of signals. But we ignore it. And as you progress further, if you still don't attend to that, that irritation will further go into your emotion and you'll start getting angry on small things. They say an angry man is a hungry man is an angry man. Now that amply demonstrates that if you're hungry, eat. Finish this appeasement of your stomach so that once it is taken care of, you get into a state of fulfillment. There's an aha effect. And that's very important. After that, any type of work you can do. So we have lost the sensitivity towards fulfilling our needs as time has progressed, as we have become so-called global people. We live in a environment where many of our needs are not recognized by our own selves. We don't fulfill them. And when you don't fulfill a need, you develop what is called as an altered behavior, which results in a state called frustration. So if I am deprived of sleep, I am supposed to be sleeping at a certain time and I don't sleep, I do something else. My body is craving for sleep, but my mind says nothing doing, let's do that. Then what happens is your sleep is completely gone haywire. You get irritated. And then as the time progresses, you get into a frustrated behavior time and again. If this continues for too long, you get into a state of frustration. And that shows in an irrational behavior with the wrong people. And we find many such people today, they are not emotionally healthy. They are not really emotionally healthy because they have not taken care of their health. Then they run to doctors, they do this, they do that. They do many things, you know, they talk about cholesterol. All this starts only because your need is not taken care of. It's a very grave thing. And when you come with all this baggage in you and you come to the workplace and HR is trying to give you motivation, that motivation is not really effective on you. So this is a sort of my inputs to you to make you understand the importance of how to fulfill your needs. When your needs are fulfilled at the proper time, when the signals are given to you, fulfill them. Because when you fulfill them, then your life is balanced. When your life is balanced, you achieve more. If you take any leader, any successful leader anywhere in the world, you read their biography, you'll always find that they have a balanced life. Most of them. It's important to have a healthy body and a healthy mind and also achieve results in life. You know, people come and tell me crazily, you know, at the age of 40, I want to retire. I said, what will you do after 40? What will you do after 40? Nothing. You'll be a nuisance to everybody if you retire. Keep working. Go by the normal curve by which body and mind are in alignment with each other, because that is what is motivation of living. At the old age, why are people being unhappy? They start crying about what I did not do at the age of 13, at the age of 15, because they didn't fulfill the needs. So recognize your needs, and when you lead a balanced life, social interaction is very important. Social norms are very important to be followed. At the same time, your personal needs are also to be catered to properly. This balance is something that requires human intelligence. Motivation is a state one experiences when needs are fulfilled. Motivation arises when individual needs are recognized and fulfilled by the organization initiatives and activities. The organization has to realize that every human being is different. Everyone's needs are different. There may be a struggler of life who needs money, who's working in the company. In the same department, another peer member may actually not have need for money. He may have a need for appreciation. Are we giving that need to him? We don't even recognize that he has it. We feel that one glove fits all. That doesn't work. Then we complain about people leaving the company, attrition and stuff like that. We don't recognize this part of it. We don't give human resources the true resource importance. At certain levels, it's neglected. It's a fact. At a slightly higher level, it is not neglected because that person is useful to the organization. Each employee gets motivated only when his or her needs are fulfilled, leading to satisfaction. That's called a satisfaction. 100% fulfillment is equal to satisfaction. I feel satisfied with my job, which means my needs are fulfilled as far as my job requirements are concerned. Every employee thus is driven by needs different from the others. So taking it further, HR, human resources, and in turn the organization has to recognize the individual needs and create processes to fulfill them. HR department's key role. You do recruitment selection, you do manpower planning, you do everything else. But the HR department's main role is the front office role, I call it, wherein you're dealing with people and emotions on a day-to-day basis. And this need not be anybody from the HR department alone. It can be you and me. So when I take this subject, I always make a mention to everybody that don't take HR as another department, another set of people who are skilled or something. This skill is there in every human being. As long as you're dealing with people, you're getting results, you're understanding human emotions, and you're touching their hearts, and you're getting work done, and you're fulfilling their needs, you are an HR person. And some of you listening to me who are not necessarily from HR background may be having this quality in you. In the classroom discussion, I speak about what are the qualities for an HR person, human qualities. Okay, so HR in turn, the organization, both the organization to drive it, ensure that HR is recognizing individual needs and cater to them properly. Different strokes for different folks. As the saying goes, people are all different and have different needs and desires. According to that, we must manage them and give them the inputs. While companies adopt motivation policies encompassing all employees, it is the role of HR to individualize the motivation based on individual needs. Let me give monetary motivation to the whole company, doesn't matter. But over and above that, is there something that the individual needs? Today we have got counselors in companies who take care of that. Today there are departments, there are some people in HR who actually engage, are into employee engagement. They talk to them, take employee surveys, and to know more about the soft side of the human beings. They do that. But then are we doing it all encompassing everywhere? That's a question. Lot of unexpressed emotions I come across when I'm doing training with people. Not just junior, I'm not talking about junior, I'm talking about middle management level. Manager level people are hurt. They are having their emotions locked up inside. They don't express themselves. One of the most important inputs, the moment need arises, what can you and I do as a human being, as an adult? What do the kids do? The kids express it, they communicate. When a need arises, please communicate. Your motivation starts from there. If so, for some reason, so-called company culture, so-called, you know, arrogant boss, so-called this, so-called that, if you stop communicating, then you're actually suppressing your needs and it's creating a lot of toxicity in you. Physical toxicity, emotional toxicity, everything starts coming up. In organization behaviors chapter on stress and time management, I speak about this. Okay, friends. So taking it further, there's a mention in the book, it's come from the old texts and all, performance is considered to be a function of ability and motivation. A person may be having a lot of motivation, he may be fulfilling a need, but then at the job level, when he's joining a company, there's a job given to you. And in that job, you have to perform. That will come only when you have an ability. Ability means I know the job function, I've developed the skills, and I'm capable of doing the job. So that and motivation put together, it enhances my job performance. Motivation for an organization has the following benefits. It puts a human resource into action, no doubt. It improves level of efficiency of employees, reduces cost of operation, improves efficiency and productivity. People get self-driven. They realize that the company cares for me. It leads to achievements of organization goals as a consequence. It builds friendly relationships. A motivated employee, he relates to the world very positively, so he becomes friendly. Effective cooperation reduces unrest, employee adaptability, etc. It leads to stability of workforce. A highly motivated workforce in a company driven by the culture usually results in stability and growth of the company. Nature and importance of motivation continuing further. Motivation is important both to the individual and to the business. Motivation is important to the individual as motivation helps achieve personal goals. When an individual is motivated, he experiences job satisfaction. No doubt about it. Motivation helps all in self-development of the individual. When I'm motivated, my needs are fulfilled. I know how to go from one level to the higher level to the higher level. So I start growing in myself because I am expressive of my needs and I fulfill the needs on a time-to-time basis. Needs have to be fulfilled on a time-to-time basis. They can't be delayed. If you delay, there are always backlashes in your communication, in your body, in your mind, in your emotions, everywhere it has a backlash. Please be aware of that. The nature and importance of motivation. The more motivated the employees are, the more empowered the teams. Yes, the more effective the teamwork, the more profitable and successful is a business. During periods of change, there would be more adaptability and creativity if people are motivated. Those of us who were motivated very high during the lockdown, during the COVID, there was still a good amount of creativity and adaptability. People adapted themselves working from home. Did they not do that? The ones who recognize their needs, who have the habit of fulfilling the needs, who have the habit of being motivated, they are the ones who really came out with good outputs. Rest of them were crying. They were complaining about many things. Motivation would lead to optimistic and challenging attitude of at the workplace. When I'm motivated, I'm willing to take something challenging. And I always feel positive about the future. The mind and body, they work in consonance with each other. They are not at loggerheads. Right? Now, we cover many theories which explain motivation. Out of that, two categories are there. Early theories of motivation and contemporary theories of motivation. Okay? Now, they are basically nothing but one is called as I'll take it up further. These theories fall under the content theories of motivation. Early theories of motivation I'm covering now, they fall under the content theories of motivation. They address the what of motivation. What motivates people? That is the external state of the environment that motivates. Now, fulfilling my need is my prerogative. Now, there are two things. Externals, they act as a trigger to fulfill my need. I'm in this lovely room, well-lit and well-air-conditioned, wherein my need of being comfortable is fulfilled. Because of that, what is happening is, what is fulfilling, what is motivating me? This external, one of the motivations is external conditions. But is that everything? No. Internally also, I must have a need that is fulfilled. Only then I can deliver the lecture properly. So it's an internal, external put together that is a full motivation. Now, in this part of the discussion, early theories of motivation, we are discussing what motivates external state of the environment. Under this, there are a few theories which I'll be covering now. The first one is most popular. Most of you know about it. We are doing it in organization behavior subject also. This is called as the Maslow's need hierarchy theory or Abraham Maslow's theory of needs. Abraham Maslow, in his research, he came out with a pyramid structure like this, as shown on the diagram. Out of the pyramid, look, the pyramid is square at the bottom, very broad base, solid. It's a foundation. And as you go up, it tapers into just a point, which figuratively means that there are five levels which he said people fulfill needs. And according to him, they go systematically. Physiological level, which is a physical level of the body. Safety needs, belonging and love needs, esteem needs, and self-actualization needs. So at the base of the pyramid, physiological needs, which means you take care of a basic, as you say, roti, kapda, makan. So a man primarily is interested in fulfilling his basic needs, physiological needs of eating, sleeping, having water, etc. He would not think about doing MBA, he would not think about doing bigger things when these needs are still not fulfilled. That was Maslow's theory. And when he fulfills his needs adequately well enough, physiological needs, adequately well enough, mark the terms, and he is feeling secure that my physical needs are taken care of. Now this varies from person to person. I may feel secure with the basics of a bed, of a basics, I'll feel happy about it. So my physiological needs are taken care of, I'm feeling happy with that. I may be thinking of going to the next level. When I feel adequately taken care of, I go to the next level of fulfilling the safety needs. So I need safety. It is the physical safety of having a better home, financial safety of having more money with me, etc. So I extend my comfort zone slightly more. I'm not living hand to mouth. I become slightly better. I have some savings, etc. These two needs are individual to each of us. It's personal. It's a basic needs or level one needs, as you call it. For this, I don't have to consult my brother. I don't have to consult my wife. I don't have to consult anybody outside my body. I don't have to consult society. Human beings have got two types of needs. Individual needs to the person and social needs, since we are social creatures. As and when this needs is adequately taken care of, safety needs, my safety needs are adequately taken care of, I feel so. Then I go to the third level where I want to belong and I need love needs, which are social needs. I want to socialize. I want to meet people. I want to feel good that, you know, I feel validated. So they come home, they see my home, such a lovely place, etc. So I feel nice about it. I feel there's a certain type of a connection between me and the people around me. My siblings, my brother, my sister, everybody, all the world at large. Haven't you noticed people who are struggling for money, struggling for home, they don't socialize with their own siblings? Haven't you noticed it? But once everything is okay, they start calling them for lunch, dinner, whatever. The socializing happens. They are feeling comfortable also. According to Maslow, now this is where the social needs are starting. According to Maslow, when people are adequately well enough, they feel that my social needs are taken care of, then they think of the next one called the esteem needs or ego needs. Something that I want to do, I want to prove something to myself, to the world, that I can do a management course, I can do engineering, I can do something, or I can paint. On a hungry stomach, you may not think about it, as per Maslow. So when you start feeling this esteem needs, you start doing something, you start contributing to yourself and the world. You take up a job, you work in a company, you're adding value to them. You take up some assignment in some society, in social work, you add value. So the interaction between you and society starts developing in a big way. Beyond that, as per Abraham Maslow, there's something called self-actualization needs, very, very sublime needs. This need is there in every human being from the time you're born. There's a need or a spirit in you to do something without any agenda. I just feel like giving charity to somebody. I feel like helping someone. And this doesn't come with an agenda. It's a spontaneous desire, a spontaneous type of a process that happens in each of us. And this self-actualization is a pinnacle of the pyramid. So people, according to Abraham Maslow, go step by step from physiological to safety, to belonging, to esteem, to self-actualization. He created a model which was more like a mathematical model. Human behavior is not mathematical. So this has its plus and minuses. The plus is, it gives you a framework to understand how we get motivated step by step. Fair enough. But not all people fall in this category. There are many of us who would not have food to eat, but we would like to paint. We'll be up there somewhere. There are many of us who do not have anything with us, yet we want to go and do charity for people. And society gives them a lot of abuses. You're not taking care of yourself and you're doing charity. Now that's a separate issue. Now you come across people in this whole universe who do not follow the pyramid step by step from bottom to top. They go up and down, they're somewhere at the middle, they come down again, go up, etc. That's human behavior. So this is a shortcoming of this model, but it was a starting point, good enough. I still appreciate it. It's still the standard for understanding motivation for anybody who studies motivation. Okay, now we go to the second one, which is called a theory X and theory Y. Very simple and very famous. Douglas McGregor proposed two distinct views of human beings. One, basically negative, inverted commas, labeled as theory X, and the other, basically positive, inverted commas, labeled as theory Y. Why we put inverted commas? People think that theory X is negative. People think that theory Y is positive because of the feel good or the feel bad. But feel good and feel bad is very subjective to a situation. A feel good or a feel bad is subjective to a situation. Let's understand what it is. Under theory X, four about the manager or the person who's having people working with him. Now theory X and theory Y have created what are called as theory X behavior, theory Y behavior, theory X employees, theory Y employees, theory X managers and theory Y managers, also theory X organization and theory Y organizations. This demarcation, it appears as if there is X and Y, but it's a combination usually of X and Y given certain scenarios. Remember that. So what are we doing here? Under theory X, four assumptions are held. Employees inherently dislike work and whenever possible, they would attempt to avoid it. They are assuming that employees are people who come there to work. They don't like to work and they would like to avoid work. Like we say, kamchor. Second assumption is employees dislike work. They need to be coerced, controlled, threatened. They need to be pushed. On their own, they will not work. They need to be pushed. This is the assumption of theory X. It also assumes that employees would shirk responsibility. When you give them something to do, they would try to back out or they will give some reasons and try to delay the thing. The fourth assumption is most workers place security above all other factors associated with work. They say, I want to feel secure. I would not do this. This is the assumption of theory X. So since all these assumptions are enunciated, anybody who reads it would feel theory X is very, very anti-human. It's negative. We may feel so. It's not so in total form, right? So let's take it further. Theory Y has a goody-goody nice assumptions for the average human being. Employees view work as being natural, as rest and play. Theory Y is assuming, it is posting, it is presupposing that people come to the work, they enjoy coming to the work as much as they enjoy playing or resting. Some of us do that actually. Employees exercise self-direction and self-control when it is committed to objectives. Wow, lovely feeling. They are assuming that people are self-directed. They know when to do what to do. They have a self-control. They don't go out of bounds. The third assumption is an average employee learns to accept and even seek responsibility. The average employee says, come on, give me some job. I'll take it up. I'm willing to own it up. Such a positive thing about human beings, right? D. Creativity and ability to take sound decisions. They have the creativity and ability to take sound decision. It can be made by anyone, this theory says, and not necessarily by the top management. So it's a very good feel-good theory, theory Y, right? Now, let's discuss both. Theory X is important when you want some project to be done on a timely basis. You have to push people. even the most important persons need to be pushed when there's a time element. And the project is critical. Theory X is important. Theory Y is important when everything is going on well and things are, people are self-driven, they are already realized their responsibilities and they are doing a good job. So just manage them. Don't force things. Now both have to be applied in proper proportion depending on the situation. Theory X is as important as theory Y. Everybody takes a safe path. Theory Y is the best thing they say. Even you may feel when you're listening to me. But theory Y has got its limitation. If I start assuming these things, I will not have productivity when things are expected. So both are equally important. Right? Thank you very much.